Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts, typically with a focus on Kenpo. As always, I am your host, Reggie Darden, and I am once again excited at a loss for words to have another wonderful guest here, the one and only Christine Bannon Rodriguez. There's, you know, like I said, at a loss for words. I'm excited to have her on to chat because she's been involved in not only being a great martial artist, been involved with a number of projects that I'm a big fan of. So hopefully we can talk a little bit about that. But I'm just excited here. How we usually kind of kick things off here, I usually kind of give a little tiny background of my background, and then we get into our guest journey. So I'll just start things off by saying that I train in multiple martial arts at this point. I'm involved in Kenpo, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Hapkido, Capoeira, Muay Thai, and I think that's all of them right now. I also have some experience in Taekwondo and did a little bit of boxing. So I stay pretty busy, but so that is kind of my little start there. But we're here for the guest, so I will turn it over to our guest here, and tell us how did the martial arts find you? How did Kenpo find you? How did it all start, and where did it all start? And we'll just kind of go from there.
Oh, I would just say, you know, the martial arts. I just got involved with a girlfriend just as another sport, another after-school activity. Didn't realize I'd fall in love with it. Just, you know, I had done basketball and softball and figure skating and gymnastics and, you know, tried just about every sport that there was, and I enjoyed them, but when I started with martial arts, like I said, it was just kind of to tag along with her. And I ended up falling in love with it. She probably quit within the first year. And, you know, the rest is history.
Yeah, it's funny to me. This actually the last guest that I had, this came up. But it's funny to me how many people that I've spoken with that they're known for their martial arts, you know, martial arts life, martial arts career, but yet majority of them, it seems like that was not the thing that they were going to get into. A number of guests have had a similar story to yours, and in that their friend, you know, got them involved, and their friend didn't stick with it, but then the person that really wasn't into it or wasn't their idea, that ended up becoming their life pursuit. And so I always find interesting and funny that many of those guests are not, that was not their kind of their first choice or first path. And so that's why I like to say how, you know, the martial arts found you versus you finding the martial arts, because doesn't sound like you were looking for it at the start. So
no, not at all.
So now that first school, what was it, a Kenpo school, or what system was that first school?
I started, and it was my husband's school, my husband now. But it was a private school. It was in the back of his house in a garage, and he taught, you know, it wasn't a commercial school. It was, you know, just a private school, and you know, more neighborhood type of people that attended. And then eventually we ended up, I opened our first commercial school back in 1985. You know, so he always had that private school. He was a commercial shell fisherman during the day. And, you know, so we ended up doing the commercial school because I was competing so much and it was so costly that, you know, he said, well, you know, you need to help fund this somehow when I was in college and stuff. So, you know, we opened the first commercial school, and, you know, he still ran his school in one area of the town, and I was on the opposite end. And then eventually we ended up merging the two schools as they got more successful. And, you know, the rest, you know, we've had a commercial school since then. So it's been great.
Gotcha. Now, since the martial arts was not something that you were pursuing, what was it that got you hooked in? What did you see, or what did you do that got you hooked in into it?
I think it was more being a individual type of thing where you progressed according to how much you put into it, you know, how much attendance, you know, how much you practiced. As far as competition goes, at that time it was more individual, you know, it wasn't like a team competition. So, you know, as being a mediocre player, you know, average, I didn't feel like, you know, that pressure of being on a basketball team and not making the shot, or you know, in softball, or, you know, you weren't spending any time on the bench. You're 100% participating. And, you know, I wasn't letting down the rest of the team if I made an error, or, you know, didn't get a home run or something, you know. So I think I enjoyed that part, being more individualized. And then, you know, when I got into the competition part, I think I started competing like as an orange belt, you know. So I did start competing early. But when I got into the black belt divisions, I really, really became, you know, obsessive with it, because it was, you know, seeing your name in Black Belt Magazine and not Black Belt, Karate Illustrated, for the readings, and being in the top 10 in New England, and, you know, just trying to climb that ladder and being able to see my name in print and how I'm progressing and getting higher in the rankings and stuff. So I became, you know, wanting to be number one in New England, and then it was in the country, and then it was, you know, moving on to the world. So, you know, it was fun climbing up that ladder and going through the baby steps, you know, more of a local thing, and then national, and then international.
Gotcha. Now, were you instantly drawn to the competing side of it? Did you have to warm up to it? So for me, I was never particularly interested in competing. I was in about a handful of tournaments, and I believe I got disqualified in every one. So competing was not really my forte or something I was particularly interested in. But was that something that you were instantly drawn to, or?
No, not really. When I first competed, like I said, I think I was an orange belt. And back then, even though I was only 13 or 14, I was, you know, the same size I am now. So, you know, the rules were a little different. So my instructor said, you know, as far as going in with the juniors, which would have been 13-year-old boys, you know, and some of those boys at 13, you know, reach their growth spurt, and they're like 6 foot, and some of them haven't yet, and that they were closer to my size. So for forms or weapons, I did go in the junior division against the boys. But then when it came to fighting, he felt that I would do better off in the women's division. So it didn't matter that I was under 18 back then. They didn't have any rules like that. So I entered the women's division, but back then it was white to black belt. So, of course, I ended up having a fight. Larry Kelly's wife, who's a Larry Kelly, may rest in peace, but he was a great fighter, you know, back in the day. And, you know, I ended up having to fight his wife, who was a black belt at the time. So it was, you know, I didn't warm up to the competition early on like that, you know, but I did it because the school competed and my instructor wanted us to go. And it wasn't like tons of tournaments throughout the year. It was, you know, a handful, and I would go and compete and, you know, do decent. And like I said, I don't think the competition part really excited me until I was around brown belt level, brown and black, and And that's when I really, really got into the competition part. But I was more interested in, you know, learning and achieving my black belt at some point and, you know, just improving and progressing. So the competition part was more later on in my higher ranks.
Gotcha. Now, was there like a aha moment when with the competing, or was there like a moment or a competition or something you did and it was like, okay, yeah, this is definitely what I want to do, or is it more gradual?
I think it was more gradual, and you know, when I got into the black belt division, I was competing against the men an awful lot. And, you know, when judges are judging according to power and focus and speed, you know, of course, some of those guys are going to be, you know, show more power because they're just bigger and stronger. You know, so the competition back then was, you know, more traditional. It wasn't, you didn't see too many creative routines. That was kind of, you know, just starting. And so my husband said, well, he wasn't my husband at the time, but my instructor at the time had told me, well, you should use your assets, you know, the things that you do well. We should try to capitalize on those, you know, and your flexibility and different agility. So he suggested that I maybe start training in wushu, just because as a traditional art, you still had like butterfly kicks and aerial cartwheels and jump kicks landing into splits and different things like that. So he felt that that would be more of a stronger point for me and make it better for me to be competing against the men so that, you know, I could use those different things I did well. So I started training in wushu. And so instead of going out and doing hard style forms, I was going out doing the soft style forms or soft style weapons and stuff. And, you know, that was a new journey. So I, you know, been training in the wushu since right after I'm earning my black belt, started doing that. And, you know, it gives you a total different style, you know, soft style versus hard style. So, you know, I do both of those as well.
And so just to be clear, what all systems have you trained in at this point?
Well, the system that we teach and that I've been brought up in is Okiru Kenpo. So that style of Kenpo, it's like an open system my husband created because he trained with Professor Nick Serio and George Pizzari. And also was certified in under Ed Parker, Master Ed Parker. So three different styles of Kenpo. So he kind of created his own system between the three styles that he trained under. So we don't really teach Serio Kenpo. We do some of the Parker material, usually after black belt. So I train in the Okiru Kenpo system, but I also train with wushu. And I teach kickboxing as well, and I teach Krav Maga as well.
Okay, very nice. Now, with getting into the wushu, was it a difficult transition? So, when I talk to people that have been in multiple styles, I in my own journey, I started in one form of Kenpo, and now I do a different one. And I had I guess I still struggle with it as well. The kind of you learn certain habits and things like that. And so transitioning from one to the other has been kind of difficult. So when you started getting into the wushu, was there a difficult transition to go between the systems, or?
It was in some regards because you so used to putting, you know, as much power into every technique, where the wushu is very fluid, you know, and on those endpoints you really snap out that power, but you're getting the power through the speed and the you know, the speed and the agility of the motions, just it that part was pretty hard for me to just try to be as quickly as do the moves as fluid and as quick as I could, rather than, you know, emphasizing every ounce of power into every single technique. So that part was a little tough, but once I got the knack of it, you know, it became you know, something I really enjoyed doing, especially the weapons, because the weapons are so different than hard style weapons, you know, where we have the bow and the nunchucks and the sword, more of like the samurai type of sword training, where in wushu it's broadswords and they'll do the double broadswords or double hook swords, the three sectional staff, the spear. The bow's completely different than the karate type of bow. And, you know, so I enjoyed that. And I always like to try to come out with some kind of weapon routine that was different. You know, a lot of times you go to a tournament and you have like 19 people doing the bow and maybe three doing the sword or something, or kamas or something. But so I always like to try to be different and do something that not everybody is out there doing. So I had chose to do, I did double broadswords, and then I competed with double hook swords. And then my last weapon that I really, really enjoyed doing was the broadsword and the whip chain together, which was pretty unique because you had a short range weapon as the sword and a long range weapon with the whip chain. So it took a lot of coordination and stuff. It took a lot of training to get that routine down, and a lot of clunks in the shins and the head with the whip chain and different things. But that was one of my favorite routines.
Oh, very nice. I can totally imagine. I can't really imagine being able to do both of those at the same time. I've clipped my wrist enough just playing with a karambit, and we won't talk about my times trying to use a nunchuck. So, yeah, that's that. just thinking of just the chain whip by itself, I would think that that's just beyond difficult on its own. So to try and wield that with something else is pretty mind-blowing to me. So.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, definitely unique and exciting on that. So I like that. I like that. Now, coming up in the competing, since they're, well, let's see. Coming up in the competing, you know, were there, who were kind of people that you were maybe looking up to, or, you know, was there any, or were you just kind of, I'm just going to forge my own path and.
Well, I did, look up to certain competitors, you know, loved, watching people like Jean Frenette do his, forms, and Keith Hirabayashi or Keith Cook now, with the, forms. And then in fighting, you know, of course there were fighters out there like Nasty Anderson and Billy Blanks and Kevin Thompson. And, you know, I'd read about and see on the covers of magazine, Linda Denley or Arlene Lemus. And then I end up, you know, when I started competing nationally in the, you know, in the same rings with these competitors. So it was kind of being, you know, kind of awestruck when I'd see them and putting their gear on and then being right next to me. And then eventually I end up, you know, having to match up with them. So that was kind of cool. And, you know, as far as the women fighters back then, you know, I'd usually, as I got better, I would be winning the lightweight division, and then I would have to fight. At the beginning, it was like always either Arlene or Linda for grand champion, because either one of them, you know, were the dominant forces in the heavier weight division, and so I'd usually end up having to fight them, and they were both very, very tough competitors. And then Arlene ended up going into the Olympic style for Taekwondo, so we didn't see her out as much. And then, you know, As I got better and better and closer to beating Linda, you know, Velasquez would get closer and closer, and then she had retired. And then I kind of took over at that point and was the one that was winning all the grand championships all the time. So, you know, a lot of times it was always a heavyweight that was winning. And then when I came out and started winning, you know, kind of opened people's eyes that a lightweight could actually win the fighting grands.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. So let's transition over to the teaching side of it. When did you get started with the teaching part of it? And was that something that you were always interested in getting into? Or like many guests, were you just kind of thrown into it? And
yeah, well, like I said, I was competing all over the country, and it was getting to be very costly. So besides going to college, you know, school, you know, I had opened that commercial school. And, you know, I really enjoyed the teaching. Didn't think I would enjoy it as much as I did. You know, you just see people that are, whether they're kids that are either, you know, you have both sides of the spectrum. You get some that are afraid of their own shadow and super shy and, you know, have zero confidence. And then you have some that, you know, are really teetering on the edge of hanging out with the wrong type of people and getting involved into the wrong type of things, whether it's drugs or, you know, different things. And so you kind of bring those two opposite ends of the spectrum and bring them to the center, you know, and balance them out and get them going in the right direction and building that kid's confidence up. And, you know, you see such dramatic improvement with them. And then with the kids that were kind of probably heading down the wrong path, getting them to get their life back together and focused on what they should be doing and, you know, being good people and stuff. So, you know, I really enjoy that. And then you have the adults that, you know, you have all different types, that certain ones that really just need to lose some weight and get in shape, and other ones that have, you know, whether it's a situation that they were in, it is needing to know how to defend themselves, and they wish they had known it prior, or just people wanting to just know how to protect themselves and their family. You know, and then people just wanting to earn that black belt and you know, become an instructor or just do something in the martial arts or become future world champions themselves. So, you know, everyone has a different goal, but I really enjoyed teaching and trying to help them reach those goals. And it's great when, after being in the martial arts and teaching for so many years, when people come back and they're like, you know, they have their own kids now, and that they're bringing their kids to train because they want them to have that same experience and guidance. You know, or they could just come back and say, you know, they just got their doctorate, you know, their PhD, and you know, can't thank us enough for guiding them and setting that mentality that they could achieve anything that they want to if they set their mind to it. So, you know, it's just rewarding to see those things and people coming back to you years down the road.
What would you say is maybe some things that would be necessary to build a good instructor?
You know, a lot of times, even when I look in my own school, there's people that are super talented and can do, you know, unbelievable technique, and huge skills, but they're not always the best instructors. Sometimes it's the person that might not be able to do it as well, but they can get the point across to the student, and they can really focus on what their goals are and try to help them achieve it. So, you know, sometimes it's not the most talented that makes the best instructor.
Gotcha. Yeah, I remember hearing a story, and unfortunately, I'm blanking on which guest mentioned this, But they mentioned the great Frank Trejo, and he was teaching them, I believe it was Form 4, and he was doing this while he was in a wheelchair, had a number of health difficulties, but he was able to teach long form 4, and all from the wheelchair. And it's like, yeah, that's definitely the sign of a someone that understands the material and can teach it well, right, despite not being able to do it themselves at that point. So that's definitely important. I think a lot of people, when they get to their black belt or even not even a black belt, but an advanced rank, they kind of automatically assume that they're able to teach and get that point across, get that information across effectively and clearly. And it's not always the case. So.
Right.
So on the kind of other side of that, what kind of things would you say make a great student, or how do you mold a good student?
Well, I think a good student is someone who practices what you tell them to do. Practice makes perfect, and someone who's dedicated and puts the time aside to train and come to classes. And there's a lot of people that can learn very, very quickly, and a lot of times they feel like they should be zipping through belts and don't have to put in as much effort. But you have to teach the individuals. So, sometimes I have two students with equal ability, but one person came in and they didn't know their right foot from their left, and they were the most uncoordinated person, and couldn't kick above the knee. And now these two students are kind of equal, but that other student kind of came in the same way that they are right now. So they didn't really improve. So you want to, look at a student and remember where they came from and what kind of progress they made, because everybody's different. And you do have those students that have natural ability and they don't put a lot of effort into it. And you have to look at that. And again, repetition and muscle memory. If I can learn a technique and do it really well, but I don't rep it out and don't make it where it's muscle memory and someone grabs me and does something to me, and while your adrenaline is crazy and you have zero time to think and it's just react, those reactions aren't going to be there if you're not creating that muscle memory by doing it so many times.
Gotcha. I like it. All right, so now we're going to move into the entertainment side. So been fortunate to have had a chance to chat with a number of folks that are in the biz, and you are get added to this list. So so I'm of course curious about WMAC Masters. You had a nice role on that show, and I know I was always tuning in every week to see you do your thing. So how did that come about?
Well, WMAC Masters was actually the second time I had worked in front of a, camera and did film work and stunt work. My first time was actually the next Karate Kid movie, where I doubled for Hilary Swank. That was the first time I ever, and it wasn't something that I had as a goal or a dream to be behind the camera, to be in front of the camera and doing stunt work or acting or anything like that. Pat Johnson, who was, he stunt coordinated and directed or was the fight coordinator for so many big movies, including like all the Ninja Turtle movies, all the Karate Kid movies, Batman and Robin. He worked on the WMAC Masters. So he was filming the next Karate Kid, which was not Ralph Macchio this time. It was Hilary Swank. And they were filming in Boston. So Boston is, I'm from Rhode Island, so it's really like an hour away. And they were filming, and I knew Pat Johnson, met him at many tournaments, and we were good friends. I never said anything to him like, oh, if you ever need, you know, a female stunt woman, let me know. You know, I never had that conversation with him at all. We were just very good friends and met through tournaments. You know, he would go out and kind of scout people out at different tournaments and support, you know, as a martial artist, he enjoyed going to the tournaments and supporting his friends that were promoting the events. So one day he just called me and he asked me if I'd be interested in going on set and meeting Hillary and seeing how we sized up together and stuff. And he had a stunt woman that did all the other type of stunts. You know, there was a stunt where a car pizza delivery guy almost hits her, and you know, she does a stunt and a ladder stunt and some different things that she did, the stunt woman. But when he said when it came to the fighting part, which is what the movie is all about, he said, you know, I don't want to have someone who has some martial arts training out. I want to have the best female that I could find, you know, to do that stunt scene. So he asked me if I would be interested. So I took a ride to Boston with my husband, and you know, we met everybody, the director and Hillary, and we were pretty close in size. And you know, from that point, you know, he said, oh, well, if you want the job, I'd like you to come and film a few days for this main fight scene. So I thought it was extremely cool. I felt like I was a weight belt again, because, you know, I had to learn the lingo on set and when I'm supposed to do my stuff. And, you know, as far as being a very shy person, if I was thrown out there to say lines and stuff, I probably would have been extremely stressed and nervous. But, you know, telling me to kick certain things or at, you know, certain marks and stuff, I mean, you know, I had extreme confidence that whatever they were going to ask me to do, I was fine doing, and it wasn't going to be too complicated. So it was a lot of fun, but that was my first job. And then after that, you know, I got into the union, of course, and I said, oh, you know, I really enjoyed it, so I wanted to pursue it and do more. And then the WMAC TV series came up. And it was a very unique show because they actually took champions from all different categories. You know, you had Herb Perez, who was an Olympic gold medalist. You had myself, who was a NASCAR sport karate world champion. You had Richard Brandon and Larry Lamb and Carmichael Simon and Hakeem Alston and, you know, Bridget Riley, who was a boxing champion. And, you know, so you just had all these, you know, true martial art champions all together to make this TV show. And I really enjoyed the show because we were just like in the karate school, you're trying to teach life lessons. And the show tried to teach that, you know, whether it was about discipline or sincerity or any of those different things that the show would try to teach each week. And it was, you know, a half hour episode, so it was really condensed into, you know, some high action with the fights, but then with the dialogue and different things that they were trying to teach through the show. You know, I thought it was a great show. Unfortunately, it only went two seasons and we did not get a third season, but you know, Carmichael Simon is working hard at trying to bring that back, and hopefully we'll see it come back out.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that show, and it was just always a pleasure to watch. And yeah, I was excited to kind of see some of the things with it kind of coming back. I actually do have plans. There's a gentleman that wrote a book about WMAC Masters, and he was kind of a big force in kind of getting it revived. So I'm definitely gonna have a chat with him.
Is that Chris?
Chris
Landis.
Yes.
Yeah, how to say the last name, but
yes. So yeah, I'm excited to kind of see some of those things coming back. They're starting to pop up in my social feeds, different things. So that's been pretty exciting. But yeah, I always enjoyed that show because, you know, like you mentioned, it has those good wholesome values, good kind of martial arts, Mr. Miyagi kind of, you know, good principles, and reinforce those instead of just being about, oh, well, this person's fighting this person and they're gonna, you know, take them out and beat them up. And it's like, no, the martial arts is there's more to it than that sort of thing. So I always enjoyed that aspect of it.
Yes.
I didn't realize that the Karate Kid was before WMAC Masters. So thank you for clearing that up. When did the Batman and Robin thing come up?
That was I remember filming WMAC Masters in Florida. We were always at Universal Studios down there. And they, Pat Johnson again, had told me that they were looking for someone to double. And so when I thought about it, I was like, I wasn't working on a weekend or a certain day. So I ended up flying from Orlando to California. And, you know, that was quite the experience. So it was kind of like, I would say near the end of the second season, Alicia Silverstone is the one that I had, doubled and worked with Cheryl Wheeler on the film, and she doubled for Uma. And, you know, it was just a great experience. It was just such a high budget movie. And, you know, it was, you had Arnold Schwarzenegger on there. You had, you know, just some great actors and actresses. And I remember going for my fitting for that bat suit or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, the person that they took me to go see, like, handmade, you know, custom made, like, all of Michael Jackson's outfits back in the day. And, you know, just, you know, all these top celebrities. And I mean, the leather boots, I mean, everything was just completely fitted to my body, you know. So it was, although it was heavy and cumbersome, at least it fit perfect, you know. And you know, it was just a really, really cool thing to do. And we filmed that. I want to say it was like December time, because I remember having to come home and felt like I was really rushing to get things ready for Christmas, being away and stuff. And, right after Batman and Robin, I was supposed to go to Thailand and work on Mortal Kombat, and I was supposed to double over there and be there for 3 months. And that was going to be like the very, very beginning in January that I was going. And I went to the travel clinic to get my shots to, you know, the malaria, because we were going to be basically like in the jungle. You know, filming. So I had to get malaria shots and pills and, you know, all the other required travel things. So when I went to the travel clinic here in Rhode Island, you know, they ask you a question that they always ask women, you know, any chance of being pregnant? And I was like, well, I guess there's always a chance. I don't know. I can't say 100% I'm not. So they said, oh, we can't give you any of this stuff unless we do a pregnancy test and make sure that you're not pregnant. So I did a pregnancy test and found out I was pregnant with my first son. Oh. So technically, I always tell him, you know, that's why he probably is into the stunts and everything as well, because he was in my stomach when I was doing Batman and Robin and I had no idea. So
very nice. Very nice.
Yeah. But unfortunately, I had to cancel that trip because there was no way I was going to, you know, risk, doing any kind of stunts, being pregnant or being out of the country in that type of location. So I had to call Pat Johnson and give him like, you know, he probably had like a week notice to get someone to take my spot. So it was, he was very happy for me, but he said on the other end, he's like, I'm very sad for me because I don't know what I'm going to do now. So unfortunately, I wasn't able to work on the Mortal Kombat movie, but I did work on the Mortal Kombat TV show, had doubled on one of the episodes, double for Katana. That was here in the States, in Florida as well. So, and that was after I had my son. So that was kind of cool too.
Very nice. Yeah. Another show that I, very religiously, tuned into every week. And, so now I need to make sure to, to watch out for you on my next rewatch. Always enjoyed that show, and the fight scenes on there were really, really done well. And a lot of the great artists contributed to that. So,
yes,
very nice. Just to kind of satisfy my curiosity, did you happen to know what role you were going to have in Mortal Kombat?
I believe it was doubling the Katana character.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay, right on. I like it. So since you got to be a a real life superhero, did you get the bug at all? The Hollywood bug catch you at all? Did you want to be in more things or have a aspiration to follow that?
Yeah, I did, and I kind of I wanted to do more stunt work and get involved with more films, but I wasn't. You know, I really enjoyed the martial arts and teaching, and you know, I had a family now, and so it was not something I was willing to like move out to California and being going to auditions every other day and really banging on the doors for that. I figured, yeah, I had gotten the work I had gotten because of who I, you know, being a world champion martial artist and, you know, them wanting that particular skill level. So more work was coming to the East Coast, whether it was in New York, Boston, even Rhode Island. So, you know, I kept my name out there and would do some work on different films that were local. Or if they wanted me to travel, I would. But I wasn't going all over the place trying to audition for different films, you know. So, and I still do some stunt work today. And it's just not something that I, you know, it's not what's going to put food on my table. And I'm not doing it that much, you know. So, but I did do work on, Underdog. Did some stunts on that and not martial arts at all, but some stunts on that. And then I was in 27 Dresses as one of the bridesmaids. And then I did, Salem's Lot recently, Mother Android. So some of those movies were filmed over here in Boston or Rhode Island. So it's kind of cool when you can, you know, just get up in the morning and go to work rather than fly across the country and be away from your school and your family for a long period of time.
Exactly. So besides Mortal Kombat, was there anything that you were up for that you didn't get that you wish you would have got to be in?
There's a lot of different shows that, you know, I'm sure I would have loved to have been on, but nothing that I went and like auditioned and then didn't, you know, got turned down or anything like that. But yeah, there's a lot of great action films and stuff. I mean, like, you know, Kill Bill and you know, there's some really good female stunt roles or action stars out there that were some great movies. So, but nothing that I was, really had my hopes on and didn't end up getting, no.
All right. Very nice. Very nice. Yeah, I guess the other question, so one of my previous guests was Karen Shepherd, and she had mentioned that she got involved into the stunt work, that she also got to get involved with some of the other kind of stunt sides, not just the fighting, but you know, the high falls and the driving and things like that. So did you get into any of that, or was it just primarily martial arts?
Mostly martial arts, but like I said, like Underdog and Salem's Lot and some of those other movies were not really fight scenes. They were just doing, you know, regular stunts, whether it was falling or getting pushed around. Or I did some driving in Underdog. They have the dog flying through the street and, you know, so you had to have stunt people doing the driving, not extras, for different things. But nothing like, you know, doing a high fall off a super high building or anything like that. But, you know, a lot of different stunts that I've done.
Good deal. Good deal. All right, so we are going to move into our lightning round here. I got a few questions as we head towards wrapping up here. First question being, do you have a favorite technique?
Probably the sidekick. The sidekick's always been my bread and butter, and I think it really stemmed from back in the day when I was always fighting big guys, you know, where I use that more like a jab or whatever, but the sidekick would keep a 200 and something pound guy away from me. Like, you know, if they're wanting to punch me in the head or something, that, you know, like that sidekick could always keep that barrier and keep that opponent away from me.
Very nice. Yeah. That just reminded me of a video I saw not too long ago. And it was like a Muay Thai fight. And there was this lady that was just, she was just rattling off those kicks like it was nothing, and they were like all head kicks, and it was pretty impressive. And the lady that she was fighting just couldn't even get close, couldn't get anything rattled off other than just getting kicked in the head constantly. So yeah, that's a great weapon when you can use it. Use it well. So I like that.
Yep.
All right. Next question. Do you have a favorite form and or set?
Probably that whip chain and broadsword routine I used to do, the wushu form. That was probably my favorite, you know, because it was took a long time to master it. And, you know, it had a lot of diversity to it because of the long range and the short range weapon combined.
Very nice. All right, and so that kind of leads into the next question. You have a favorite weapon?
Yeah, that would be my favorite weapon, the broadsword with the whip chain.
Very nice. I like it. All right, next question. If there is anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, besides Ed Parker, who would that be?
Ooh. That's a good question. Well, I've always admired Mike Stone, and we've actually had him in for a few seminars at our school years and years ago. And it would probably be pretty cool to train with him or Chuck Norris, that I, again, know him personally as well. And but never did any martial arts with them. Just, you know, those two would be pretty cool.
For sure. Yeah, I'm jealous. I want to hang out with Mr. Norris for sure. We'll both definitely would want to hang out with both of them. But so
yes,
very nice, very nice. All right. Last question there. What is something or someone that always inspires you to train? So I usually frame this with for me, when I watch Rocky IV and they have the training montage of him in the snow, you know, chopping the wood and lifting rocks and all that stuff like that. Anytime I see that, I'm ready to get out there and hit the mats, and that always fires me up. So what is something like that for you?
You know, I think when I see certain people that are older than me, you know, some of the masters out there, and I see, you know, how much, what their knowledge is, and the ones that are still training and still trying to learn more. You know, definitely, you know, I'll go to a seminar and learn something, or, you know, work with someone and learn something. And I'm like, you know, there's just so much still to learn in the martial arts. You know, not only just in your style, but outside of your style, you know, and that excites me when I learn new things, and I'm like, God, I've been doing this for 45 years and I can still learn, you know, different moves that I just didn't know existed before, you know. So that really motivates me to just keep going, because it doesn't become boring when you're learning more things.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree. There's it's always something new to learn, you know, just in one style, let alone all the different styles that are out there. So yeah, we're always always a student, always something new to gain. So that's I like that.
Yeah.
All right. So our final thing here before we close out here is now it's time for shameless self-promotion. So you can plug anything you want, or if there's anything that you wanted to get out there that maybe we didn't cover today, now is your chance, and we'll go from there.
Well, my husband and I promote the Ocean State Grand National Karate Championships, which is, it's one of the 12 tournaments on the national tour for NASCAR. So they have 12 tournaments throughout North America. Some are in Canada, some are in the United States. So we are one of the 12 tournaments, and that runs in April every year. This year will be April 10th to the 12th. I shouldn't say this year. Next year, 2026. And, you know, it's a great event. You know, it people look at it as being, you know, a big international event, but, you know, there's still divisions for beginners and 5 and 6 year olds, and, you know, it's not a world class when you're in the white belt and beginner divisions, and we do 7-foot trophies for all the underbelts.
Nice.
So it's great competition. It's a 3-day event, and you know, that's probably one of the biggest things I'd want to promote. And I'm also, November 15th, I am doing at the Martial Art Museum out in California. They do, you know, a few people every year where it's a, you know, it's going to be a Christine Bannon Rodriguez Day at the Martial Art Museum. So I'll be out there, and they're going to show some clips of, you know, either a Sci Fighter movie or WMEC Master or something I was in. They're going to show some stuff like that, and just, you know, have a meet and greet and hanging out, and just supposed to be a big event there on November 15th. I would probably be there on the day before and the day after at the museum a little bit as well. But that's something I'm looking forward to being out there.
Very exciting. Very exciting. I like it. All right. Well, I thank you so much for taking the time to be on with me and sharing your story. I'm excited for all the things that you've done and are continuing to do. And yeah, I can't wait to get this out for my listeners to hear. And once again, just thank you so much for being on.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.